And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Just a quick reminder, please take the poll that's up on my website, brainstormingonline.com. It's a real simple yes or no question. I ask you today, will you be looking for a new job in 2012, yes or no? And I will announce the results of the poll on Thursday's show. You'll find the poll on the right-hand side of my homepage, which is brainstormingonline.com. That's brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is money. Each of my guests is discussing an aspect of money, making it, keeping it, or conning it. My next guest is the best-selling author of 16 novels. His latest novel, Need You Now, is ripped from the headlines and asks the question, what if the U.S. government knew about Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme and had a secret agenda? We'll discuss this premise and just fraud in general. If you want to ask a question or join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. James Crepando is the national selling best author of 16 novels, and they've been enjoyed worldwide and in 26 different languages. He likes to quip that he is no longer clueless. His transformation occurred back in June of 2005 when a James Crepando novel was the clue number 38 across on the New York Times crossword puzzle. For the last 9 years, James has served as counsel for the law firm of Bowles, Schiller, and Flexner LLP, and in January 2009, the firm filed one of the first class action suits on behalf of Bernie Madoff's victims. So for the past several years, James has been a keen observer of the efforts of his firm and others to recover the billions of dollars that were lost by Madoff. James holds a Bachelor's of Arts degree and a Juris Doctorate from the University of Florida. Joining us from the Sunshine State. Hi, James. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being our guest. Now, Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme is the biggest in recorded history. There are estimates between $18 billion and $16 billion were bilked from investors. But one of the puzzling aspects of the case, and probably the biggest conundrum of all, is where's the money? I mean, certainly there should be assets and expenditures that can be traced. Bernie Madoff's assets don't even come close to the money he admits to stealing. So where'd the money go?
Yeah, that is the question, you know, and my law firm got involved in that sort of search early on in January 2009. December of 2008 is when Madoff collapsed. He turned himself in. The arrest occurred. To much to the public's disbelief, that you got to remember back in time that sort of hit everyone as sort of the what is going to happen next. My goodness, you had the collapse of Bear Stearns in that year. You had the collapse of Lehman Brothers. You had Wall Street kind of teetering on the brink, and then along comes Bernie Madoff. It just kept going up and up and up in the estimates. It got to be about $60 billion, and the loss firm that I work for, Boies, Schiller, and Flexner, filed a claim, not directly against Madoff, but against Madoff's so-called feeder funds. And the reason I bring that up is because it shows you just how difficult it is and has been to trace Bernie Madoff's actual assets. These feeder fund lawsuits did not sue Bernie directly. They sued the hedge funds and other sophisticated investment advisors who told their clients to invest with Madoff, told them that he's a good guy, essentially, that they had done their research and that Bernie Madoff is legit. And when it turned out that Madoff was running nothing but a Ponzi scheme, it was revealed that these firms actually did very little to verify Madoff's legitimacy, and therefore that was the basis for the claim against them. So much has been recovered against these firms who advised people to go with Madoff. Irving Picard, who's the trustee in charge of recovering of money on behalf of the Madoff victims, has settled numerous cases and totaled up about $9 billion. Our firm has one of those suits against a hedge fund in Greenwich, Connecticut, that they earned something like $500 million in fees from Madoff victims by referring their clients to Madoff. But again, that only totals up to less than $10 billion. I say only less than $10 billion. But when you can compare that to the overall estimates of what Madoff may have lost for people who put their trust in him and his record of 20 years of investing on Wall Street, that's like 1/6, you know, 16% of the money. And those are questions we may never know the answer to. So I explored, I thought that was the appropriate thing to, where a fictional work like Need You Now might help people think about things that to get to the root of that unanswered question.
Well, and it is certainly an unanswered question. I find it interesting, too, because the money that you're extracting, the money that you've recaptured so far, is in punitive damages. It's against these feeder firms. It's really not the initial money that was lost in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme whatsoever. My guest is James Scripondo. We're talking about his latest book, Need You Now. And, you know, just looking back at 2008 and thinking about the Bernie Madoff case, you look at the Securities and Exchange Commission, and it really appeared as though they were running around like the Keystone Cops of the movies in the 1920s. Is the law enforcement arm of the SEC really, it's made up of tireless, dedicated people. There's no doubt about that. But as a group, they seemed very incompetent and bumbling and sort of fools who couldn't sniff out a Ponzi scheme if it was underneath their own noses. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, that was the one version of it you could take as that. And so when I got into this case, I did, uncovered some red flags that were brought to the SEC's attention. And one of them, I think anybody can understand, is that Bernie Madoff's performance record over some 20 years that he was claiming to be such, you know, the whiz kid on Wall Street. His performance record was the statistical equivalent of a baseball player batting 962 for a period of 10 years running. Now, you don't have to know a lot about Wall Street or anything about baseball to understand that 962 batting average just doesn't happen, not even in a single season, let alone 10 years running. So that's sort of like red flag number one. And there was an investment advisor in Boston who collected like 38 of these red flags in a detailed report that he submitted to the Securities and Exchange Commission. And in his words, no one would listen.
Right.
And I wondered, you know, when I saw that, like I said, you can either accept that the SEC is the Wall Street version of the Keystone Cops. I found that premise hard to accept because I've known many people who've worked for the SEC, and some of them work for my own law firm now, and they're pretty smart people. So it made me wonder, well, if they're not incompetent, then why did they do nothing in response to this kind of information? And that's the premise I ran with, and where I kind of took off my hat as a lawyer and started becoming the fiction writer and thought, what if they did know? Why would they do nothing, and whose agenda would they be advancing by taking no action in response to a Ponzi scheme that is the largest fraud ever committed on Wall Street?
Well, and the interesting thing about it, James, is that the only reason that the Ponzi scheme was even exposed is that Bernie Madoff himself turned himself into authorities. I mean, this might have gone on for years more before the government actually built a case against him and then acted on the case against him as well. People that I've talked to, and I've had Harry Markopoulos on the show who wrote the book, No One Listened, and several other people, and they claim it's because the SEC investigators are underfunded. There have been too many budget cuts in Congress and just left them really a shadow of their enforcement selves. But your book takes a different spin on it. You look at it and say, well, what if they did this on purpose? What possible end could they be promoting in order to not persecute or prosecute Bernie Madoff? So what did you come up with as your premise?
Well, I'd be giving you about chapter 45 of the book and spoiling it for most people for the premise. But it really was, that's really the brainstorming that I'd processed that I did in coming up with this premise of, what if the government did know? Why would they take no action? And what agenda would they be furthering? One of the things that in the course of writing the book that sort of made me reinforce my own thought that I was onto something is that the Securities and Exchange Commission recently, like in the last 2 months, did its own internal review of the Madoff situation. And it looked at everyone who had anything to do with reviewing the conduct of Bernie Madoff, the performance of Bernie Madoff, and concluded that the most severe punishment that anyone deserved was a 30-day suspension without pay, and that was given to one person, which sort of, to me, sort of lent itself again to this question of really a low-level guy gets a 30-day suspension without pay in response to the SEC's complete dropping of the ball with respect to a $60 billion Ponzi scheme. And mind you, a Ponzi scheme is not a sophisticated investment. It's an outright fraud. Charles Ponzi, back in the 1920s, for whom the Ponzi schemes are named, was selling postage stamp coupons and promising people a 50% return within 90 days. A Ponzi scheme doesn't even have to involve Wall Street. It's just the most recognizable fraud you can imagine. So the fact that, you know, some low-level guy gets a 30-day suspension without pay in response to a $60 billion Ponzi scheme that the SEC missed, again, makes you ask the question, who knew? How high up did that knowledge go? And why did they take no action? And who was benefiting from that? And that's the core of Need You Now.
Yeah, my guest is James Crepando. His novel is Need You Now. And looking at this, James, I don't want to get all political on you, but if a 30-day suspension for one worker in the SEC was the most severe penalty that was there, doesn't that talk to you about the nature of government jobs and how difficult it is to get rid of a government worker, no matter how competent or incompetent that person may be?
It could. That, you know, again, that's one view of it. The other view of it would be is that it's a little more sinister than that. And it's not simply that you can't blast people out of their jobs. It's that you protect the people who are higher up and know about it. Now, and again, this is where kind of my role as a novel writer kicks in rather than any kind of investigation that would reveal that. But it raised real red flags for me that the culpability within our own government extends to a low-level guy who gets suspended for 30 days.
Without a doubt. My guest is James Crepando. James, what made you make this transition from Juris Doctor, a practicing attorney, to becoming a novel writer? That is not your most direct career path that people tend to follow.
No, but if you go back in time and you think of when I first started doing this, I mean, this is my 19th novel, so the first one came out in the early 90s. I started writing in the 1980s, and just for many of your listeners will remember that the hottest television drama on television back then was L.A. Law, and the hottest book in the country was Scott Turow's Presumed Innocent, and then came along a book called The Firm, which I guess last night, just, you know, The Firm television show just debuted.
That's right.
So this genre of books by lawyers, about legal problems, has really had some legs. You know, I can remember sitting down with my editor after I wrote my first novel and him looking at me from across the lunch table and saying, so when is this legal thriller bubble going to burst? You know, so here, 19 novels later, I'm still writing. And part of that, I think, is that I've been able to broaden myself with books like Need You Now. Most of my books are about Miami criminal defense lawyer Jack Switek. I have 9 in that series. Need You Now is a standalone, has nothing to do with Miami. It's set on Wall Street. Wouldn't call it a legal thriller. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't really call it a financial thriller either, because of the reasons we talked about with how a Ponzi scheme is just such a blatant fraud. It's about corruption and in a very high ivory tower on Wall Street. So it's really a Wall Street thriller with just all of the good page-turning components of many of the thrillers that I've written over the years.
My guest is James Crepando, author of the new novel, Need You Now. James, what do you want people to take away from reading your book, Need You Now?
I would love for them just to step back and say and question, raise the same questions I did. When you read this and you see the Wall Street occupied people, protesting, saying, you know, Wall Street has gotten out of control, maybe you should ask yourself, where's the partnership here? You know, has Washington and Wall Street just gotten too darn cozy? And you'll have some fun reading about that in Need You Now.
Well, it is a great book, and I'd recommend it. James, thank you so much for being my special guest. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, you can get it on any of the online sites, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com. And I also love hearing from all my friends and letting them know how let them know how they like the book. James@jamesgripando.com. JamesGripando.
Oh, that is great. James, thanks so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.